Thank you for joining us today, Rachel.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with the pollution in Beijing this past January, specifically the horrible smog that covered the city for days, with residents being warned not to leave their homes. A lot of outsiders compared the Beijing smog in January to the Great London smog of 1952 or the New York City's killer smog of 1966. First off, do you think it's fair to compare Beijing's pollution to London's in the 50s or New York in the 60s? Is this the same level and type of pollution?
Well, I can certainly see where the comparison is coming from. All of those examples you mentioned are all examples of air pollution in major cities that are driven by, that are an outcome of industrialization and economic development. They're huge crisis events that really galvanize the public and draw attention to an issue area. So sure, I think the comparison is fair. Whether or not it's totally accurate is a little harder to say, just because it's hard to get, at the risk of sounding like a social scientist, it's hard to get data that is exactly comparable. So one of the things that was in the news that you probably know about was that China just started measuring particulate matter under 2.5 microns
in
January. So whether or not the quality of the smog is exactly the same, it's really hard to compare. That London smog that you mentioned, I just glanced back at some of the historical accounts. There were accounts that 4,000 people died in that smog.
Right.
So that's not quite the same as the apocalypse that we're coming out of. But I do think that the events are comparable in terms of drawing attention to a problem and sort of galvanizing the public behind the issue.
And that's what I think like a lot of foreign journalists and China watchers kind of also looked at when they compared Beijing to London and New York, that they argued that these kinds of incidents are necessary to get the society on board to promote environmental awareness and movements. But to what extent do you think China is different from London or the United States? I mean, do you think the fact that China is a one-party state with a developing legal system will cause a different result?
Of course, the fact that it's a one-party state with a developing legal system shapes all the possibilities for environmental activism in China. Let me start with the part where they're actually kind of the same. I think one of the things we see in environmental movements worldwide is the difference between crisis events and chronic problems. So chronic problems, the fact that air pollution is terrible day in and day out, in general what happens is people learn to live with it. It just becomes the new normal. And sometimes you get this with Chinese friends who are visiting the States for the first time and hadn't realized that it could be different.
Right.
So the role of the crisis event is to create a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And crisis events, for that reason, tend to play a really large role in environmental movements. So I'm actually hopeful that the apocalypse will play a similar kind of role in China as the Great Smog and other events like that did in the United States.
Right.
What's so different in China is that the opportunities for public participation are so much more limited. And we'll talk more about this, but it's really hard for NGOs to bring environmental litigation under the current legal system. So that's really different than here in the United States, where NRDC and the Sierra Club were really instrumental in some of the major pollution lawsuits of the 1960s and 1970s.
Right.
And of course, there's no elections. So that's really different from Japan, where the LDP started to take on environmental issues when they started losing elections over it. So that mechanism of accountability is somewhat broken in the Chinese case as well.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned, like, in comparing London and New York to Beijing right now, that, you know, it is kind of similar path with the industrialization. And so let's rewind a bit with, like, China and focus now just on China. China basically kind of starts industrializing in the early 1980s with Deng Xiaoping, and with that we see the increasing environmental pollution and degradation. But when do you see the development of an environmental movement or concern about the environment? I know the past decade we've seen a lot of laws, but have you seen it before that? And was there a certain incident or crisis moment that really sparked public and government attention to the issue before 2000?
Yeah. So I always felt uncomfortable talking about China's environmental movement. I think I only started using that term, like, with some degree of comfort maybe last year.
Okay.
It was really recent.
Well, what made you uncomfortable about using it?
Well, a movement implies a sustained political push by a large group of people. So China's first environmental NGO is founded in 1994 by Liang Zongjie, that's Friends of Nature.
Okay.
So there's some, that's sort of the first generation of environmental NGOs in China is in the 1990s. And they had really notable, a few really notable successes, particularly drawing attention to the hunting of a rare Tibetan antelope. That was one of the big early Friends of Nature successes.
Okay.
But throughout that early period, the NGOs are really focused on environmental education and raising awareness of environmental issues. And they really had their work cut out for them. When I think about surveys from the 1990s, there were just a few, but they were really super interesting. One of the survey questions that got asked, for example, in one of these surveys in Anhui province was, have you ever heard of the term environmental protection? Have you ever heard of the term Huanbao?
Mm-hmm.
And over 90% of people said, nope, never right. heard of it.
And who were these like surveys given out to? Like who gave out the surveys, and then was it just a general public?
No, it's a general public
okay.
in a rural part of Anhui province.
Okay. And was and this sponsored by the Friends of Nature NGO or
No, this was a group of environmental researchers that were both in China. There was a joint Sino-American team.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the story throughout most of the 1990s, and then attention to environmental issues really started to pick up in the 2000s. There was a dramatic expansion of the NGO sector in general, and blossoming numbers of environmental NGOs were a big part of that story. And with more groups, you got more diversity of approaches. And this coincided with a time when the central government really started making environment more of a priority, too.
Right.
So one of the key moments was in 2007, when Wen Jiabao introduced the phrase ecological civilization, Shengtai Wenming, at the 17th Party Congress. And a lot of observers, both within China and outside of it, really saw that as a sign of that environmental issues were rising in prominence for the central government. So that was a big event, that 17th Party Congress, the Green Olympics, of course, Beijing. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be possible to hold an Olympics in one of the world's most polluted cities?
Right, that was
a huge event. In the 2000s, and then I also the cancer villages
right.
and the amount of media attention surrounding villages where there were lots and lots of people dying of cancer, and the media, the Chinese, this was all the Chinese media, not the international media, but the linking of those cancer cases to pollution, were three of the events in the 2000s that really, really jacked attention to environmental issues inside of China. And as the decade has worn on, we've started to see more of the NIMBY protests, especially in the urban areas. I finally started to feel more comfortable thinking about an environmental movement.
Okay.
that's widespread enough. It isn't just a few people.
Right. So in terms, you had said before that, you know, you don't have elections in China and that there's less accountability, but this media attention to some of these cancer villages, the fear of 2008 Olympics being like a pollution nightmare for the government. I mean, there is, in a way, some, like, accountability, or...
I think there's definitely responsiveness.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some degree of accountability, too, through responsiveness. It's just that the mechanisms are different.
Right.
You don't have election... You know, in democracies, elections are the mechanism by which government officials are held accountable.
Yes.
And here you have a government that's really trying to be responsive. And you see this all the time in the kind of NIMBY protests that come out of urban areas. They actually back down quite a bit and give urban residents what they want. But that's because of fears of unrest or media pressure or being embarrassed, not because of elections.
Now, in terms of, like, the Chinese government responding to some of this pressure, so the past decade has seen an enormous amount of laws written for environmental protection.
Yeah, huge numbers.
And you discuss this in your book, Environmental Litigation in China. Now, just based on what's written, how well written are they and how thought out are they?
I think they're pretty well thought out. This is, it's part of a big trend towards drafting lots of laws. There's been the 1990s and 2000s were boom times for legal drafters in China. There are just laws being drafted all the time on all subjects. We can't have gaps. And often the process of legal drafting is a really thoughtful one of looking around the world, seeing what other countries do, trying to pick and choose the elements, the best practices that are really going to work well for China. So I think over the course of the last decade, the consensus has changed a little bit from saying China doesn't have enough environmental laws to saying, well, the laws that we have on the books, they're not perfect, but they're not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the consensus has shifted to thinking that the problem is really about enforcement.
Okay, yeah.
About, you know, the gap between what should be happening and what's actually happening.